With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to part two of this week's final Clash of the Titles February Fanny, the podcast that this February pits two movies with something in common picked by fans of the show and puts them in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we discussed if True Lies was Arnie good, which means we're asking today if... Oh, shit.
Marker. And action.
On Monday's episode...
Take three, marker.
On Monday's episode, we discussed if True Lies was Arnie good, which means today we're asking if this movie is the pits or jolly good fun. It's the same joke as Monday, because why waste something that's funny? Wait, let me start that
is
again.
Is Arnie good?
Is Arnie good?
Yeah, is Arnie good?
Let me just start.
No, it's fine. This is all good. This is all good material.
Now we're all on board.
Places, people, places.
On Monday's episode, we discussed if True Lies was Arnie good, which means we're asking if today's movie is the pits or jolly good fun, as we talk 2005's Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
We did it! We did it!
I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. There were times I just wanted to kill her, but...
Likewise.
Couldn't take the shot.
That's a good sign.
Sometimes
you have to battle through.
Hmm. That's marriage, right?
Yeah, you take your best shot and...
Oh, we redid the house.
Hmm. We did. Yes, we did.
You know, there will always be challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Threats out there.
Yep.
So which film will we be wedded to and which will we want to divorce ourselves from? We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles. Slick.
We're keeping all that in, by the way. That was
sure.
Very entertaining.
Excellent. Hello, Clash Butters. You look like Christmas morning. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
So it is part two of this final Clash of the Titles, February Fanny, and the messy marriage melee that is True Lies versus Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Okay.
Mm, well done.
We're recording slightly earlier than normal.
Yeah, it's a morning record.
And I need another coffee. Right, as you well know, one film will be declared the winner in the verdict at the end of the show. Once again, who do we have to thank for this clash, Chris?
Mr. Rob Lawson, thank you very much for suggesting this pair. We're having a good time doing them. But also, this is officially our final Febby Fanny film. So thank you to everyone who sent in a suggestion, because it was an avalanche of pairs that were sent to us. I think we nearly hit 650 this year.
Wow.
For suggestions, and obviously we only did sort of 8 pairings altogether. Mm. 9 pairings, so yeah, much appreciated. They're all on file. A lot of people suggested stuff we're thinking about doing anyway, so over the course of the year I'm sure some of them will come up. Mm. Next week one is definitely coming up. Mm. But just a big thank you to everyone who sent in lovely pairings, sent in nice things and nice messages, and we really do appreciate all of you.
Yeah.
Some will definitely come up as well, because let's not forget that Vicky often dips in to the listener suggestions.
That's fine. Which, I think that's a good thing, as long as we acknowledge. If we remembered to.
Well, so why did you have such a go at me when I was like, maybe we'll just sort of do them sporadically throughout the year? And you were like, no, we're not doing that. And you've literally just said we can do it as long as we acknowledge them.
No, in terms of sending them in, stop sending them in. I'm like Ringo Starr. Have you seen that Ringo Starr video where he asks for to stop people? I'm warning you with peace and love.
You've shown it.
Stop sending me fan mail with peace and love, I'm warning you.
It's so funny. It's so brilliant because I think he's a prick anyway. And so when you showed me that, I was like, I'm right.
Right. Shall we crack on with this?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, on Monday, V told lies that were true, which means today Chris is having a big bowl of all Brangelina. Chris, take us on a journey.
Mr. and Mrs. Smug is a film about a couple who love themselves more than anything else in the world, including guns. And they really love guns. Mrs. Smug even keeps hers in the oven. Anyway, both husband and wife are spies, but neither realises the other is a spy. Then when they find out, both Smugs try to kill each other, which somewhat undermines the sanctity of marriage, something that these actors would know nothing about, as they were too busy shagging behind Jennifer Aniston's back.
Wow.
That's one of the friends, Brad Pitt, and we love them as if they're our own friends. Well, apart from Matthew Perry. But I'm digressing. Some other stuff happens in the film. Then Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie get married in real life, but then it all goes horribly wrong and they have an acrimonious and very nasty divorce that's still going on to this day, making the moral of this movie, don't fuck with the friends.
Wow.
So
let's get that done.
Yeah, it's out there. Now it's done.
Yeah.
There's so much to unpack. That's one of my favourite synopses you've ever given.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. No, the blending of reality in this movie.
Yeah, I felt like I wasn't going to talk about the personal life stuff in this film. And then I just sort of, get it out of the way early on.
Yeah.
I find it all quite boring. But
I didn't realise that was a joke, a gun in the oven instead of a baby.
Yeah.
Because they don't have kids. They're assassins.
Kids.
A gun in the oven. That's good.
Clever. Vicky, when did you first see Smug and Smugger?
So, in 2005, the job I had, when we had nothing to do...
One second. What? Am I sensing right off the bat that you do not have a lot of love for this film, or you just find them quite smug characters?
We'll get into that.
All right, fine.
yes to the second thing you just said.
Okay.
That's why I did the whole smug...
Got you.
So, I was in an office, and we were allowed to, and did a lot. When we had nothing else on, we just sat around and read gossip magazines. So this is like me, 2005 me, 2004-5 me. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I've never read them before or since. But during that time, during that job, it was brilliant. And we just used to sit around drinking tea and reading absolutely all of them. And so when Brad and Angelina were, you know, they met on set and is it on or is it not? And then with him divorcing Jennifer Aniston, I was like, bloody hell, I have got to see this film. And then I saw it. And that's that.
Oh, interesting.
A lot of people saw this movie. I had no idea until I did my research this week just how big a hit this was.
Yeah, huge.
Mad.
It is mad. So, but you're drawn to it because you're like, I'm going to see chemistry that is unreal.
Mm.
And maybe you do, maybe you don't.
But even if they aren't having this affair, it's still like the... pretty much the two hottest people in the world getting on screen.
But also they're looking hot as well.
They look,
I don't think either of them have ever looked better than they do in this movie.
I agree with you. He's obviously a very, very attractive person, but she just gets better, I think. What was I going to say? Oh, and also good actors. It's not, some people are hot on their shit at their job, but they are two fantastic actors as well. So it's like, just got everything going on.
Yeah. Alex?
So I was very excited about this movie because, as you know from our time at college together, big Doug Liman fan.
Yeah.
I've probably watched Go more than any other film ever.
Yep.
Also love The Bourne Identity. And so I was excited about watching this. Swingers too. I know, obviously.
Love Swingers.
Swingers. Yep. So but Doug Liman was like a big director to me. And I watched this and I thought it was okay.
Mm.
And a bit like True Lies on Monday, I never wanted to watch it again. Never had the desire to watch this again. But I was excited to watch it this week and... but it goes up at the end. Whereas you went down at the end. I went up at the end.
Oh, that's good. Someone needs to.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so surprised. I literally walked him to this session going, I'm pretty sure this is going to be unanimous. So I'm realizing that is not the case. Yeah. Ooh, Jeopardy.
You've got quite a job on your hands, actually.
Mm. Have I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice one.
So I saw this. I don't think I saw it at the cinema. I think it was a video watch for me, and I really liked it at the time. I loved True Lies at the time. I liked Mr. and Mrs. Smith at the time. I don't like True Lies as much now. I don't like Mrs. and Mrs. Smith as much now.
Yeah.
So there is jeopardy from my side of the fence.
We may have the deciding vote over there.
Not if I vote first.
Yeah, don't.
So let's do some behind-the-scenes stuff. I've got some good Doug Lyman stuff that I stumbled over at the last minute that we might digress a bit, but I think you'll be interested, Alex, being a Lyman fan.
Yeah, he's got some incredible stories about the way he does things.
Yeah, not good.
I'm thinking of a different story.
let's dig in. So, screenwriter Simon Kinberg wrote the first draft of this screenplay for his master's thesis at Columbia University Film School. Do you like those stories, Vicky, where they did them at school?
I do. I'm good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It also shows you how long you have to rewrite something before it sees the light of day.
Very good point.
So he said, the idea came from my passion for Hong Kong action films. They were cool, sleek, sexy and kinetic, and all that became the framework for my original draft. And you can see that. You can see the influence of those films here, I think. He said, I was still trying to figure out the story when my friends told me about their experiences in marriage counselling. It sounded like a kind of mercenary experience, which I felt could be grafted on the skin of an action movie. Akiva Goldsman, screenwriter, producer, big shot Hollywood dude, then got the ball rolling because he liked the script. He said, the story's about a married couple being forced to hunt down and kill each other, force them to pay attention to each other for the first time in years. So that's what he saw the appeal of this story being.
Yep.
He said, I chose Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
It's such a good hook, isn't it? I mean, I think it's so clever. The idea of like a marriage falling apart and solving that through arguments with guns.
Yeah, I think they fuck it up, but yeah, I agree.
And Lyman said that Doug Lyman, director Doug Lyman said that was the appeal of the script, was that I just made a film that glamorized action movies, action stars with the Bourne identity. And this is the opposite. I wanted to make a movie that glamorized maintaining a marriage, and they made the action hero part seem easy and the marriage part seem hard.
Yeah.
It all sounds good.
Yeah.
It all sounds great.
And a lot of it is.
So I'm with you, Alex. I don't normally like those lists of actors that might have been in it, but obviously it's quite interesting here because...
Jodie Foster
was nearly in it.
Jodie Foster.
What do I fancy doing now?
Is she actually on your list?
No.
Oh, okay. Maybe it is True Lies.
Yeah, no, I didn't say it's like, it definitely is True Lies for Jodie Foster.
Is
and
it?
With this one, it was Nicole Kidman, who maybe you were getting them confused.
It just seems so unlikely. If I'm her agent and I'm like, okay, Oscars, cool.
Normally I'd be feeling really good about this because I'm right. I like the fact that Chris waited the entire Monday episode to not go, actually, Alex is right.
I've waited 3 days. Yeah, I think Jodie Foster went off and made Nell, I think, which is the one where she doesn't speak. It's quite different to True Lies.
Yeah, it's really different.
Good on you, Jodie. Actually, I don't know what's better, to be honest. So Nicole Kidman was originally cast... in the movie, alongside Brad Pitt.
That's it. That's her role in Aquaman when she became Nicole Kidman.
That's good.
Thanks.
We should have said that on the Aquaman episode. But then Brad Pitt dropped out of the film, so Nicole Kidman dropped out. It then became a Will Smith, Catherine Zeta-Jones vehicle.
What?
Then it became a Johnny Depp, Kate Blanchett vehicle.
What?
I can see that.
I can't.
Then Pitt returned to the film, and Gwyneth Paltrow was going to play the role, which would have been weird, because obviously they were a big couple before.
They weren't.
Another hook, though.
Two exes getting together.
I'm only going to be in this if I can shag the person that I'm in it with, Doug.
But then Gwyneth Paltrow left, and that's when Angelina Jolie came on board, and then they had their leads locked in. I found the production notes for this film at the time, and one of the producers says that he spent...
Laura.
Sorry.
Angelina Jolie's character was definitely called Laura. It's in the note. They took it, they changed it, you know.
Laura, right.
I was right.
I know you were.
You were. You're fine.
He says they spent a long time romancing Jolie to get her in the film. And I'm like, oh, in hindsight, that's a really poor choice of word there.
Hindsight's 2020.
Yeah.
And apparently, once the two of them were cast, they pulled out a lot of the humour from the script. They didn't like... It was a much funnier film and a much broader comedy. I read about there was like a scene where... She picks up his golf trophy to throw, and he says, "Oh, I'm only custodian for a year. You can't." And she puts it down and gets something else.
Oh, right.
It was a funnier film, and I don't know whether Angelina Jolie's not big comedy person. He is, obviously. But yeah, so it became a more serious...
I think it benefits from that. I think it's good. The tone of the humour, it feels much more natural and authentic, and it feels like organic for those characters to do jokes at that level. And I think, you know, you just look at something like Keeping Up with the Joneses,
sure,
a much broader version. Go quite well with this, actually.
Yes. But True Lies does as well. So
yes,
that's
True
fine.
Lies does, yeah.
So just get a little bit of the background on the making of the film, because Doug Liman, it does seem like things don't go well on a Doug Liman set.
Mad, isn't it?
There's a funny connection this has to Bourne. So Bourne overran so much, I believe, that Matt Damon could leave the film, go make Ocean's 11 and come back, and they were still filming and could get his stuff. It happened again here. Brad Pitt went off and made Ocean's 12 and came back, and they were still going with this film. So
I think it happened on Edge of Tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
He's famous for sort of like, but I think, you know, because he's got these amazing ideas, and it's just sort of actually putting them into practice takes a little bit longer than he ever anticipates.
Yes, and it means that it goes over budget. They said they were hemorrhaging money on this film, over schedule, and they eventually had to take a committee approach to guide its completion. So Akiva Goldsman says, the truth is, Doug is a madman, but I think he has the ability to have a movie coalesce around him. Actors want to work with him, and studios want the product that exists with his name on it. But several writers and producers who've worked with Liman said that that chaos can inspire, but it can also be a hindrance. And that's LA Times really dig into this. I'm going to talk a little bit about Bourne as well. Several individuals worked on Bourne say it went off track because Liman constantly changed his mind about what he would do on any given day. He would set up, shoot something, and then not shoot it. And he asked to reshoot scenes that had already been filmed. He started trying to do that on this film, and they said, we can't. They'd set up a huge stunt to shoot it for the whole day, and then he changed his mind, and they were like, no. It got to a point where his second unit guy was coming in and having to shoot it because Liman says, I want it changed, and they were like, no, we've set up the stunt, we can't go back. And so that's why all the money is being hemorrhaged. And so on Ocean's 11, on the Bourne Identity, he clashed with Frank Marshall. Uh-huh. And Frank Marshall said he basically finished Bourne Identity and edited it. Liman said that's not true. Frank's only directed one film, Congo. You decide who directed The Bourne Identity.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, don't go after Frank Marshall. Are you mad?
Don't go after Congo.
No.
Amy want green drug.
Yeah, have you seen Congo before you even start saying things like that?
Do you know Tim Curry's nuts? Shut up.
At the end of the day, look at Congo and look at my movies and let an audience figure out where that movie came from.
Oh, and we'll see
you
on the next Bourne, will we? Oh, no. Oh, no, we won't.
Well, no, there was a big fight behind the scenes over that because Liman wanted to do it.
Of course.
And I think Damon was happy with it, but yeah.
Yeah, but the boss everyone else, said something. Yeah. Fucking me off if you
the
want
the director of Congo was not having any of it.
Yeah, play the game, honestly.
But here's what Culture Report for this film. He had a huge set built for an action scene only to ditch it when he realised he could do a cheaper version in the desert. He filmed a wraparound story featuring Adam Brody recounting the plot to Estella Warren in a bar, which he did for safety and didn't use. He shot footage of Terrence Stamp and Jacqueline Bisset playing the villains while tracking the couple down. When he decided that version didn't work, he reshot the scenes with Keith David and Angela Bassett instead. He finally concluded the movie didn't need main villains and all that was cut.
Incorrect. It does need a villain.
Agree. Yeah. But all this was shot. These are big name actors.
Also, when you said, I could do a cheaper version, it's like, it's not cheaper now, though, is it? Because we've set the fucking thing up. Yeah. So that money's all been spent. So, you can do it cheaper in the desert.
I didn't know any of that. So, Terrence Stamp was going to be a villain.
Brilliant.
Yes. You can see footage of it.
It doesn't work without a villain. They're like, what? They're like, oh, the agency's coming for us. So, we'll just kill all these people in this room and then we're fine. You've got to kill the baddie.
Well done for jumping to the end.
Sorry,
you're absolutely right. The end of this film is even I, with all my love for this movie, think it's just a cop out. It's like, so that's every member of the agency.
Yeah.
And Keith David isn't going to set up another agency. He's not going to employ more people to hunt you down.
Yeah.
Right.
And here's just one story from this set. At one point, Liman urged Pitt to deliver more emotion in his performance. The actor pointed out that Liman was shooting the back of his head. Liman says he doesn't remember that, but adds, I may have been wanting to get more emotion from the back of his head. I probably succeeded.
Fair enough, I think. Actor, do your job.
Yeah, there's that bit where he sort of, like, he punches, you know, that little it's a very Brad Pitt moment where he's walking towards the house after she's stolen all his guns.
Oh, yeah.
And he's livid.
Yeah.
Could have been that scene.
Could have been that.
Yeah. He emotes more, and you only see the back of his head, but he uses his arms. Does Lyman mention them?
He doesn't, no. So let's get into the movie. I'll talk more about what went wrong as we go through it. But we kick off with some therapy, our first piece of therapy, John and Jane. Mm. They don't think they need to be there. They've been married for 5 or 6 years. And they just need to check the oil, is how he puts it in terms of their need for therapy. Are they happy? Give it 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
A score out of 10. How often do you have sex? 0 would be nothing.
That's not a funny line. I don't know. I was
they're
waiting.
They're a bit smug here, aren't they?
Does it include the weekend, all of them? Do you know whose voice it is?
No.
William Fitcher.
Is it?
Yeah. He's the therapist.
Okay.
He's so good in Go.
He's very good at Go.
Yeah.
And he actually works really well. I like these therapy scenes.
No, they're fine.
I like them because when they first came up, I was like, oh, it's going to be like When Harry Met Sally. They're going to talk about how they met and how much they love each other. It's kind of brutal therapy. And it's fine that you don't get it because you've honestly, anyone who went to see this film, if they read anything, was like, I am seeing a couple form. And it's hard to not think of that, and you're like, oh, I'm going to see some sparks, and then you're like, oh, I'm not though. So that's a bit of a shame.
It's a little confusing as to what point this therapy is taking place. I mean, I think we're led to believe this is before
this stuff happens.
This stuff happens, yeah. And then okay, sure.
I like the 5-6 years thing though. I think that's quite cute.
Yeah. My issue, certainly watching it this time, I can't remember what I thought the first time I watched it, was that I just don't like them here.
Yeah.
And so that then leads into a problem with the whole film.
Yeah. It ruins the rest of it, really.
There's just something about the pair of them. And I don't know if it's the actors or the characters or the dialogue, but it's just...
Having been in those sessions,
sure.
I think if you are almost unwilling to be there, you do put up a protective barrier, which is to be quite flippant about the whole purpose.
Yeah.
Of therapy. And so that's what I took from them. And the fact that Brad Pitt is saying, John is saying, I don't really want to be here. Then I go, okay, I get why you're quite dismissive and a little bit smug in this scene, because you just don't believe in the whole process you're going through.
That works.
So that's why I forgive them.
Fair enough. So we're in Bogota, and we see the pair of them meet each other. Secret spies. Neither knows the other one is a spy.
Now, I don't like them in this scene because they're in Bogota and she's drinking a drink in a bar. She throws the bar's glass in an oil drum, which you're not meant to do with the property of a bar. Following scene, they're in a hotel. He just drops the hotel's coffee cup on the ground.
He does.
You're not... This is other people's stuff.
This is one of the things that I, you know, again, second mention for Robin High Fidelity, out of nowhere, right? So the sketch of the sensitive, nervous guy, I just went, you know, I said I will never reveal the secrets as I understand them of what the women do.
Yep.
This is one of them. Pretend to like dancing in the rain. We don't like dancing in the rain. No one does. It will fuck up your hair and makeup. It's freezing.
It's warm rain, though.
It's warm rain. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Unless you're definitely going to have a sex shower after, don't bother.
I dated an awful girl at uni for 1 week, and she liked dancing in the rain.
Yeah.
We were in bed one night, and she said, oh, let's go and dance in the rain. And I was like, what? And she goes, I want to dance in the rain. And she went out in her nightie, and I saw her out the window dancing. I was like, fuck that. I'm not going out there. I am breaking up with you tomorrow.
lock the door. Can I get my kids to have a hot shower? No.
And you fucked up your hair and makeup like I said you would.
The dance, it reminded me of Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
I felt like they're probably paying homage to that. I think what's nice about the dancing, though, is they're both leading, or they're both trying to lead, which is a good bit of character development there. But I also thought it was quite sexy. I felt like them getting together, I did feel like, oh, this is...
The trouble is, we spend a lot of time here because they are two very sexy people. And then later on, we've got the scenes with their respective friends. And Brad Pitt is saying to Vince Vaughn, she's spontaneous, she's this, she's this, she's like Batman, whatever. And we never see any of that. All we've got is you had a dance in the rain and now you're going to get married. Like that, I could have done with one more scene where you see them do some fun shit together.
They go to the fair on US soil. That is that scene.
Yeah, that is that scene, but that's not quite enough. And that scene's not there for their chemistry. It's there to go, he's a spy, she's a spy, because they're both like a sharpshooter or whatever.
Yeah, which I feel like I have seen. A sharpshooter at the fair. Yeah.
It's nice. You get a little bit of the competitiveness, though, the fact that she intentionally messes up because you don't want to admit you're a spy. And then she goes, no, actually, now you've done quite well.
Yeah.
I may blow my cover here and do really well.
Yeah.
So the jobs are... He's in construction and she is in tech support. We see their home.
Yeah.
Found some quotes from the person, the production designer. It symbolises their dying relationship. It is a space overflowing with creature comforts, exemplifying the height of style, but with no real warmth and heart or soul. Yeah. Theirs is a house, not a home.
Why is she so domestically focused? Like, it took me ages to figure out that she's also got a job. Like, I thought she was like, I'm Jane the homemaker and you go out to work. When she says to him, dinner's at 7, I was like, you must be meeting in a restaurant. I make you a dinner at 7 every day. Like, what the fuck is this?
But she doesn't. We find out later she doesn't.
Yeah, but why is it her responsibility? Like, that's why your marriage is in trouble.
Because it's the cover, isn't it? The cover is she's got to be a homemaker.
She's not a homemaker. She runs a tech company. That's her cover. So why is she the person that's in charge of the meals? And then she's like, oh, I'm so sad because all I think about is curtains. But you have another job. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. If the cover is homemaker, then fine. Mm,
but it's also a cover from him. She's trying to hide from him that she's a spy as well.
But she's not hiding that she works at a tech company.
No.
So why does she have to be the person that's solely in charge of their domestic responsibilities? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Wait. I'm coming. For some reason, I've decided to come down this rabbit hole with you. Right. So
I'm gonna tap out for a minute.
But it's
I don't actually fucking care.
For the same
we're
reason,
we're thinking about this film more than they did.
For the same reason that he engages in the local golf tournament, they're playing at being regular suburbanites.
Yeah.
Because
so a regular suburbanites, they don't share the chores. Is that what that's saying?
I'm sure he does the garden, but she does the cooking.
Every day at the same time.
He's in the tool shed.
But this is what he says later. He says, you approached our marriage like a mission to be executed and planned to within an nth degree, which is the kind of assassin she is.
Yeah.
We see that throughout the film. Like, he's very freeform and improvises, and she likes routine and organising things as is. So she has probably made that decision. This is how I want to run this marriage, which is why their marriage is in trouble.
She wants to run the house as well as have the job.
Those curtains are hideous.
They are hideous.
No, I think that's fair. So she's running the house like she runs her
that's
career.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. All right, fine.
And on that boring bombshell, let's take a break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back with a scene in which Ben, played by Adam Brody, wants to see the boss of the agency, Father, played, it looks like, by Keith David. And he gets given an assignment. And what the fuck?
We don't see what the assignment is. I don't know who he is.
I just don't get it.
His nickname's The Tank. I'm going to get to that a bit later. But it's very strange because this is so obviously, having read the behind the scenes, this is part of a larger plot, a larger subplot. It was Keith David and Angela Bassett in charge of the two agencies going to war with each other. You only hear Angela Bassett's voice in the film. Keith David appears on a screen and it's all cut. And so, but I guess they had to have this scene. Actually, I don't think they had to have this scene, but that's my change.
This whole thing undermines the whole film. But do you know what? It's near the end, so I'll leave it.
Therapy session two. John's there alone moaning about her. She's there alone moaning about him this time.
Fine.
They're told there are millions of couples experiencing the same problems, but their problems seem to amount to her adding peas to their dinner. I don't know. So we see them both in action anyway. She heads to a hotel. She's got some handcuffs. She strips down.
Also, wait, sorry. I can't get past this. They're happy professionally, aren't they? Because he's happy in his work. His wife doesn't know about it. She's happy in her work. Her husband doesn't know about it. Yeah. So professionally, they're happy. Their marriage is upsetting to them. But the reason their marriage isn't working is because they've never loved each other enough to tell the truth. So is this a marriage worth saving at all? That's when I'm in the therapy scenes. I'm like, you two are fucked anyway, because you've been together for 5/6 years, which is a really long time to not go, do you know what? I've just got something to tell you.
Like, but isn't it that, and it's sort of a little bit in True Lies, I think it's more, it's losing that, so they've lost the spark, which happens to every marriage after a few years, so I'm told.
And also,
but why have they never been honest with each other? In True Lies, it works because he's the spy.
Do you
and
mean
can't...
why haven't they told each other that they're spies?
Yes,
because you just don't do that. That's like, you know, within the realm of this movie, it's just not a done thing, because you don't know that the other person. He doesn't. They don't know that the other is a spy. So if he told his regular wife, or she told her regular husband who works in construction, I'm an assassin and I've killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you think that is going to do to his mind, the marriage, their cover, this life in suburbia? It's just going to blow it wide open. You've got to remember that they don't both know. It's not like they both suddenly sit down and go, you're a spy.
Yeah,
we know
that it'll be fine if they tell each other.
Yeah.
Apart from they have to.
I suppose it's because they get married on more or less a whim and a rain dance. You'd think these kind of fractures would appear a bit sooner because they've got fuck all in common or whatever, apart from sex, which is enough sometimes. But 2 years, they could have been. We're at 2 years and now we've realised we can't tell each other.
You're being very specific. This film is fine if it was 2 years.
Yeah, interesting.
That can be your change.
Interesting.
I don't think you should think about this too deeply, Vicky.
Just give me a minute.
The premise.
I think also there's probably some suggestion that their inability to be completely honest with each other and keep up this front has meant that they've backed off a little bit in, you know, being that honest with each other, because they can't, because there's one thing which has probably bled through into other things.
Everything,
that they can't totally be honest all because they're constantly worried about protecting their secret identity.
Yeah. Excuse me, I said the boring bit was over.
Yeah, sorry. But it's just then you're like, why bother saving the marriage? The marriage is done.
Because there was something there in the first place.
Okay.
They met each other on a job. So maybe like at that point they were both, you know, doing assassin-y stuff in Bogota.
They were, yeah.
And so they were both in the midst of a job, and that was quite exciting. And then obviously they can't keep doing that together because the other person doesn't know it.
Yeah.
It's boring, boring, boring.
So, okay, we see them in action. She heads to a hotel. She's got some handcuffs. She strips down. She punishes a bad boy. She breaks his neck and she abseils down using her handbag.
So, I'm annoyed at this scene because it's like, like I said right at the beginning on Monday, if you're a lady spy, your work involves sex. But then she gets to be actual Batman, so it doesn't matter. Like, she gets the Brad Pitt's brilliant in his poker scene, and that's really funny. His cover is like, his cover uses ruse and cunning, and her cover uses BDSM, and those things are not equal. But then because she gets the big action sequence, I don't think Brad Pitt's like shooting in that. It's fine, whatever, but it's not as cool as Batman. So then she gets to be Batman, and I think, thank you, Doug, you sorted that out for me, because otherwise I'm pissed off.
And it fits with the characters as well, because her agency is super high tech, his is kind of low rent, and a little bit down and dirty.
Yeah.
So she would have the good tech. And I remember that scene, I think it was in the trailer, and I was like,
that is incredible.
I want to see this movie because of that scene.
Yeah, it's great.
Because you're right. It's probably one of the standout moments of the entire film.
Mm, it's a bit smug. But did you want one of those handbags?
I guess. When would I ever use it? But you know what? When do I use any of my handbags, all right?
What?
I just buy shoes and bags.
They go to Chris White's house. That's quite weird, isn't it?
Oh, shit! Yeah, do you know what? I spent the entire movie looking at him going, I know
you probably interviewed him, haven't you?
Yeah, I interviewed him. What was it was one of the Twilight movies. And
sure, he did a Twilight.
Golden Compass.
About a boy he directed.
Oh, right.
This is, you know, they go to that couple's house.
Yeah.
I think didn't he write Solo? He was one of the screenwriters on Solo.
Okay.
Yeah. And American Pie. American Pie is Chris Weitz, isn't it? Anyway.
I don't know about that.
I think anyway, Chris Weitz. So he's having money talk with the men. She's having baby talk with the women. She doesn't like holding a baby.
Oh, classic.
As the song Baby Baby by Amy Grant is playing.
Yeah.
That is a bit on the nose.
She's made to hold a baby. You've seen that scene 1,000 times where she's like, oh, gross, a baby. Yeah. But the baby likes her. And you think, okay, this will come back because, this is why I mention it, you've been together for 5/6 years, at which time maybe a baby conversation could have happened. If it's 2 years, maybe not. So I was like, well, that'll come back. No, it won't. That's forgotten about. Like, he looks at her, she's like, oh, I'm holding a baby. Do we have to talk about this? Whatever. Nope, just forget about it. It doesn't matter.
The entire sequence doesn't need to be in the film. Does it? Does it?
No.
Nothing happens in this scene that's useful.
No.
No, because he does like, there is a nice moment where he does mention after they've been at the neighbor's soiree, he goes, I really did like your dress tonight.
Yeah.
And that's quite touching because he's doing something nice.
Sure.
Exactly. So we've got the big mission now. They both get set on a mission. He really does have everything under his tool shed, like he said. She's got hers in the oven. Man shed, woman kitchen.
Great.
For the weapons.
Perfect.
And they've both been asked to kill Benjamin the Tank, played by Adam Brody.
Played by the very slight Adam Brody, yeah.
Yep. What if...
Is it that's an intentional joke, though. It's someone somewhere has gone, wouldn't it be funny if we called Adam Brody... The tank,
yeah.
and kept referencing it because people do reference it. People go, the tank, at least twice. So it is meant to be a joke.
Yeah. So the plan is, jumping ahead because we need to. So they're both sent to kill the same man with the hope that they kill each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't make a huge amount of sense. What if they're the best assassins in the business? Yeah. One of them is going to kill him straight away.
Also,
job done.
At the end,
and then what happens
Brody's
then?
Like, oh, the agency knows you're married, so they sent you to kill each other. The agency therefore knows you live in the same fucking house. So just blow the house up. It's the same end. Like that reveal is bullshit.
It's rubbish.
Because that reveal puts you back where we were, so you don't advance the plot. That reveal goes, the agency's after you. He goes, you were always a target. So where we're back in the plot is the agency is still after you. But the agency's stupid because they could have assassinated you both at home really easily because you live together because you're married. So stupid.
Great scene, though.
What? With
in the desert, it's really cool.
If he killed... If one of them kills Ben, what happens?
Yeah. Yeah, they're the best in the business, like you say. It's just over and done with in 5 seconds.
Yeah. And then one of them will kill... And then, so they see each other and they decide... They're not going to kill each other at exactly the same time.
I know exactly what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. That's very true. It would actually be very lucky.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. They fire their guns at the same second. Nailed it. That was the plan.
Yeah.
Love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, you're so right.
That's kind of true. I didn't think of that. I forgive it because it's so close to the end when it's like, I was the bait. You were meant to kill each other. I'm like, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't destroy the scene for me because I don't know that silly piece of information at this point. Yeah. So it's fun.
Her operation is all women, super futuristic. His is dusty and old. And so he's acting the fool in a buggy. She doesn't smell a rat until he grabs his Widowmaker. She shoots him at him and they both fail to hit their target. And then it's sort of a race against time to ID the other person. I mean, I do quite like the scene where she is looking at computer footage of him, trying to see if she can identify this bloke. And the assistant says, Jane, it's your husband. Because he's on the phone. I think, oh, that's a nice little moment.
There's some great lines here, like when he returns home and they both sort of half suspect.
Yeah, they both go and get their guns.
Yeah. And then he's like, she's like, you're home early. He's like, yeah, I missed you. I missed you too. Good.
Is this the dinner scene?
Because they missed each other.
Oh, yeah, I see.
In the desert.
Is this the dinner? Is that what you mean? When they go home and this is the most turgid, slow, nonsense scene I think I've seen for quite a long time.
Really?
Jesus Christ.
You mean
where
he's not sure if it's poisoned, and then she eats the olives.
It's just... The word is turgid.
I like it.
It doesn't have pace. Simon Kinberg was like, the kineticism and whatever, that's not there anymore. Like, oh no, I understand that the director must have gone, you two are clearly fucking each other. Let's just have you look at each other for quite a long time. Move it along. Like, yeah. It's just so boring.
You're saying it's boring, but picking up on all the different little moments in it, because it's like, has she poisoned the martini? No, she hasn't, because she eats the olives out of the martini.
Yeah, but it's not
then,
fast enough.
Then he's like, oh, pot roast, my favourite. And he has the pot roast on his plate and he carves.
There's just such a weird moment where Brad Pitt is eating meat slowly. It's just funny.
Because he realises that she's eating the green beans but not the pot roast. So the suggestion is it might be poisoned. But then the only bit I don't get is he sees the reflection of poison in the mirror. What is that actually in?
Well, she's probably cleaned the whole house, because for some reason Angelina Jolie is like a domestic goddess in this thing, and she's just cleaned the drains. I don't know.
Okay.
I understand the point of it. It's a dance. It's sex. It's food. It's, are they going to kill each other? And it's rubbish. They've done it wrong.
I mean, it's, I don't want to go into my change too early, but this scene, every time I watch this scene, I think this is where the big shootout in the house starts. Yeah. I think it goes from this dinner to them realising that the other is the other person who they're meant to kill, and then it escalates into a gunfight and it finishes 100%. With the exploding house and the destruction of their old lives after they've had sex. This whole thing plays out as your act two. That doesn't happen.
No, I got confused when I was doing my notes. It's like, there's two dinner scenes? End with them fighting? It's like,
and they go back to the house where they had the dinner scene for another scene where they're not entirely sure if they're going to kill each other, which is mad, because you have this entire middle section. And granted, I like this film. Act two treads water to a ridiculous degree. Yeah. Like, how many times is it like, I'm going to kill him? No, I'm not. Oh, you pressed the button, but it wasn't me. Oh, you shot at me, but it wasn't me. Are they going to kill each other? Do they want to kill each other? Do they love each other? Back and forth and back and forth. I'm like, get the fuck on with it.
And my problem is, through all this, I'm not really rooting for them.
No.
And
you don't really know who you should be rooting for. Nah. I think it then leans into, Brad Pitt does love her. Sorry, John loves her, and she's holding back for whatever reason, because especially late with the Christmas morning thing, and she's just like, nope. But she kills him first in the lift, or she thinks she has. So then I think you're meant to root for him because she's badder than him. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And this is where it gets confusing, because it's like, he shot at her in the car, but it was an accident. There seems like a lot of accidents where the other thinks they've tried to kill them.
Yep.
So, yeah, as you said, there's the action scene here. Drives with him on the top of the car. He goes off a ridge. And this is when they realise they might have to kill each other. As Vince Vaughn, as Eddie says, they all try to kill you. No, they don't. No, they don't. He lives with his mum because she's the only woman he could trust. To reinforce that belief, Jane clears their house, including all the money and weapons under the tool shed. So Vince Vaughn lives with his mum. Mm. And there's a scene where he shouts upstairs, going, Mum, we're on high alert here. I almost killed you right there. I couldn't believe how similar this was to Will Ferrell's character in Wedding Crashers, who lives with his mum and is shouting, barking orders at her. Kate, I was thinking, what's the timing on this? Same year, both got Vince Vaughn in them.
Wow.
Both got characters called the Tank in them.
No.
Vince Vaughn's in both of them. Couldn't he have said, oh, no, hold on.
Wait.
We can't, this is the same thing. I'm in one of these scenes.
I have a question. Could you explain to me the restaurant scene? Why? So it's another scene where it's like, do they love each other or not? But she goes up to the toilet. People run out of the toilet screaming. The toilet then explodes.
Good question, yeah.
Why
was that all about?
Why does she bomb the toilet? I literally watched that scene twice over the weekend going, why does she bomb the toilet?
What does she say to them to make them run out of the toilet?
Right.
I'm going to bomb the toilet.
Or she's put a bomb down.
I guess, yeah.
You know, you'd run out. If someone put a ticking bomb down on the sink, you'd be like,
So she's already attached a bomb to John. Then she goes to the toilet, bombs the toilet, then runs off in the crowd. Then he goes outside and there's already a bomb before she bombed the toilet attached to him. Yeah. They then puts in a mailbox.
Yeah.
It's... I just don't understand what's happening.
I think it's just a bit crap, because like, she kills him in the lift and then she's like, I know what I'll do. I'll go and dine alone at the restaurant at which you propose. Yeah. Fine. And he just knows that because he's not dead and whatever. But it's just kind of like trying to keep an eye on the comedy, because They do the tango. That's all fine. But they he gets her knife and he chucks it across the room. And it's like, so now we're into more slapstick sort of, like, again, like kind of Naked Gun territory, because no one goes, excuse me, sir, you can't throw a knife across the room. Like, that appears to be acceptable within the confines of this film.
Well, he's a good assassin, so no one saw.
No one saw it.
But we get character stuff here as well, because he says she approached their job. Their marriage like a job,
yep.
Which is ties in with what you were
saying. Which I think is fine.
And she says, well, you just ignored it, which is obviously part of his problem.
Yeah.
But then they get back to the house and it's the fight. And watching it this time, I'm thinking, I don't know how much I enjoy watching a husband punch his wife.
No.
Don't know how entertaining that is. Also, I mean, it's a bit weird that you've got these stories in real life of Brad Pitt going crazy on a plane when he's drunk with the family. And you thought, this is, it's like actually True Lies when Alicia Dushku has said stuff about what happened to her with the scene at the end and horrible stuff on set and then her getting injured. And this, it's just like, I'm just really uncomfortable with watching domestic violence as sort of entertainment here.
But also they're obviously nervous of it because there's a bit where he's clearly kicking the shit out of it, but it's hidden behind
a couch.
Yeah,
exactly.
So the film knows it's bad. So yeah. Like, otherwise they're just...
We're doing it, but you won't have to look at it.
Yeah.
I think it's... I think you need it to happen in the film, so there is no real avoiding it. You need them to have this fight. The film is building up to them taking each other on. It turns from a gunfight into a fist fight. They add some levity by playing Express Yourself.
That annoyed me.
Oh, I loved it.
I love the song, but it's like, what's he doing here? Like,
they're expressing themselves.
It's
on the nose. But
still.
I think it plays it in such a way where everyone gets their fair hit. It's like every time you think, oh, that's bad because he's a man and he's like he's hitting his wife.
Yeah.
It then reverses it. So there's like that line where she's like, who's your daddy now? Mm-hmm. And it's like she's actually physically overpowered him or used her skill to defeat him. So I think they are very careful about the parity in this scene. And I actually think it's very good.
I think there's a much more elegant way of doing it than having him kick the crap out of her behind the couch. I think there's a more elegant way of doing this violence.
Bit. It works apart from the hiding it behind the couch threw me because then it's like, oh, you know it. You don't want me to see that, so then why show me any of that? Like, you just use weapons, use whatever, trip him up. I don't know, whatever.
They point guns at each other, then they're shagging. It's sort of sex and violence is becoming crossing over here. And then they start comparing notes about work. That's quite cute.
That's really, really lovely.
Mm.
I thought that was really nice. Yeah. Like, it's the best moment of the whole thing. So they sound like normal people.
Yeah.
You can see why the two of them actually get on in real life or did get on in real life. And that's the sort of stuff that's like, God, wouldn't it be nice to share the anxieties and the war wounds of being a spy with the person you love most in the world. Like when she says, I've got no feeling in these three fingers, like that's such a little thing. But
having a normal conversation about the abnormal lives that they lead.
I felt really relieved for them.
This is the message. It's like, be honest with your partner. Don't have secrets. Tell the truth.
I just can't cope with when they're like, we've had sex and now we're hungry. Fine. Let's have some juice. Please don't drink out of that broken glass.
Oh my God,
it's
broken down.
It stresses me out so much.
What are they doing?
Just don't have the juice.
First of all, she's walking on broken glass. I'm like,
you can't walk. You can't do that.
That's not right. Unless you're that much of an assassin, you aren't affected by glass. But yeah, the broken glass.
And he looks at her feeling like, oh, that's cute that she's walking on broken glass. It's so weird.
When my cousin was a toddler, his party trick was biting into glasses. Yeah, so you couldn't ever let him have a glass. My dad accidentally did it once. Oh, shit.
Did he swallow the glass?
He didn't normally swallow it, no.
Jesus, can't you die?
It's not a good habit to get into.
It's a general question for Chris.
He's still alive.
No, Chris cannot die.
Never die.
And so then there's the attack. There's sort of flash, flares, guns, grenades. A robot drops a bomb in there.
Fine.
It didn't need to be a robot.
I love that bit. It's like, they've got assassins. They've got people with loads of guns. There's a robot assassin?
What?
Is the robot being controlled by someone or is he AI? Is he an independent robot assassin?
And the house explodes and all the assassins are after them.
Because their old life, they've destroyed their old life to enter their new life. It's so clever.
And so we've got a chase where they're arguing with each other. He doesn't like her cooking. She's never cooked. I like the fact that he's doing his being the playing Johnny Big Bollocks with the evasive driving, and then she takes over and she's much better at the driving than him.
Yeah. It's a well directed car chase.
And it's good fun. The dialogue. He was previously married. It's all coming out now. She's an orphan, paid an actor to give her away at the wedding. I like it. A domestic argument during an
when
action
scene.
She says
scene. She's Jewish. That's brilliant.
She says she's Jewish.
That's excellent.
They see Eddie, so Eddie can tell them to stay alive. You've got to go your separate ways. If you remain together, you're dead.
so we're supposed to give a shit now. They get the tank. They get the tank. They want to know why both their bosses want Ben dead. Ben's sitting there in a Fight Club t-shirt.
I know.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I liked it because I liked it. But then when I thought about it more, I didn't like
it. Bit snug, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it takes you out of the movie.
Takes you out of the movie. Completely. Yeah. So it turns out he's not the target. They are, when the agency found out they're married, sent them to the same target and expected them to rub each other out. He was bait. He is bait. I don't understand. As I said, I've written it, I don't understand the plan unless they fire guns at exactly the same time. army of assassins coming after them.
Does that not annoy you? Like, you've looked at the script and you've read the script and no one's gone, oh, hang on, one second. Logic problem, guys, just want to flag. And you can write your way out of it, but you've shot the whole film.
You mean what Chris is talking about?
What Chris has just said. What I said as well, which is why I'm not bothered their house, but also much more what he said.
Let's be fair enough. How could it work? How could they both kill each other at the same time?
Is there a way of doing it? You send them to a trap, which is deadly, and they both die in the trap, but the trap
is. That's not what
big.
This one is, though. This is their assassins, they're trained assassins, they're going to kill each other. He poisoned him and then he shoots her, but he's already been poisoned. So Romeo and Juliet kind of thing.
The tank is a bomb, right? Adam Brody's a bomb, a man bomb.
But that's not the plan. The plan is they kill each other. Alex, come on.
I think if one of them decides to use a wild animal to kill the other, a lion or perhaps a hippo, and they lose control of it when they're trying to get it back in the truck.
And then it kills them.
And it kills them. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, what you need is for Keith David earlier on to really sort of lean on Angelina Jolie, like, by the way, you need to use that hippo we've got.
No, I'm right with the poison. It's the Romeo and Juliet thing.
Yeah.
Take the poison, kill the other person, and don't realise that you're dying.
Okay. There we go.
I like hippo.
No, that is good. So
we bought a hippo. You need to use it. It's one line.
Angela Bassett's not in this film anymore, but the hippo stays.
So I feel like there might be stuff missing from the film here. They're under a grate. And then they're in an IKEA. And I don't know how we got here, but all the assassins. No. And actually, that was an old IKEA warehouse that they shot it in, even though it's not an IKEA. It's a kitchen store. It's the domestic theme, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The big finale is
in. Telegraphed. Yes. Yeah, I'm going to destroy this domesticity.
I agree that at this point, even I'm like, oh, I need one. I need to know one of the villains. I need one big bad there. You can have all the henchmen in the world, but there has to be one guy who's in charge who you want to see them take revenge on.
Yeah.
I guess Keith David in this movie should show up. And just
yeah,
be like,
you're not wrong, actually, Al. Yeah.
But because I think as an action sequence, this looks great. I'm just sort of like, what's
the plan?
What's the end result? And where are we going?
And it's that thing. We know, and we're now seeing John making it up as he goes along, Jane being more direct, and then together it really works. They're, as a partnership, they are sort of the perfect assassin. They're sort of yin and yang. So it is, and it's well shot. They put on suits.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it? If they both failed on a mission because of the way they were, like Jane was too well organized and couldn't improvise, and John was a little bit slapdash.
Say more.
And they failed. Uh-huh. And then when they end up working together at the end, it's like, holy shit, as a team,
they are
now the best assassins in the world, as opposed to failing individually.
I think it might be my change. We'll come back to that.
They put on suits.
Yeah, why do they do that?
Because they're good looking people.
I thought it was because they look cooler in the sort of chainmail-y kind of body armour, but I thought they put them on to look like sort of normal Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I thought it was something to do with the normality of their names looking really normal. And
finding the time to do that when 40 hired.
Not now, love. We're getting changed. Why are we getting changed? Yeah,
have we got time for this?
A good lift joke. Girl from Ipanema.
No. Yeah. You're not allowed to do that joke.
Why? Because Deep Rising did it.
Every film's done it.
Yeah.
Like, don't do
boring
lift music for 5 seconds.
Boring.
It's smug. It's too smug. They're in the DIY section, using DIY tools. They end up in a shed full of fertilizer with their bulletproof vest riddled with bullets. Jane says to him, there's nowhere I'd rather be than right here with you. And I'm thinking, shit, they're going to do the Butch Cassidy
ending.
They almost do, yeah.
They almost do.
They go out into the way that they arc out into the light. They do.
But they don't, because they come out guns blazing and shoot everyone. Yeah. And it does look cool in slow motion. I like the use of the music there. The Mondo, I had to look it up, Mondo Bongo by Joe Strummer.
Yeah.
I went and downloaded that straight away. And they kill everyone. I guess that's it. No more assassins are ever coming after them. They killed all the assassins.
But they do. I mean, look, as I said earlier, it's a cheat. But when we return to therapy, the therapist asks leading questions about if there's going to be things that will test them in the future and how they feel that together they're in a position where they're going to be able to deal with it, which is basically saying, obviously, this isn't over. They're going to come after you again. But now that we're a team, we're going to be OK to deal with it. So that is the there you go.
Yeah.
There is an end, end, as opposed to a big question mark. Mm-hmm. They can deal with anything.
Progress has been made. Mm-hmm. And sex question, it's a 10. The smug bastard.
Yeah, right.
Probably is a 10, though, to be fair. And that is the end of the film.
Oh, I thought you meant 10 times. I'd forgotten that it was
on
scale.
No, it's out of 10, yeah. He's giving himself 10 out of 10.
Oh, right. I thought you meant we'd done it 10 times this week.
I think it is 10 times because...
Before it wasn't on a scale.
Yeah, because he's like, how many times have you had sex in the last week?
Because she says, I don't understand the question.
Oh, 10 times in a week?
Mm. Yeah, that's what I think.
I thought it was a 10 out of 10
situation.
I mean,
it's better.
Either or, I mean, it's a lot, so.
Yeah.
It is a lot.
It's either a lot or it's very good. Either way.
Either way, good for them.
Yeah, if it's a lot, it's probably very good.
Otherwise, why bother?
Right.
I suppose.
Yeah,
but that's a big question.
Sure.
Yep. So I've found an interview with Angelina Jolie. She said, our kids watched Mr. and Mrs. Smiths for the first time last year and they thought it was the funniest ever. Of course, seeing your own parents try to kill each other is for a child. It's like watching your parents play fight. It was very funny for them. She added, not a lot of people go to see a movie where their parents fall in love.
Oh.
Comments that Jennifer Aniston branded uncool.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to put the women against each other, but it was a bit Team Jen on this one, because it's like, fine if you've met and you've fallen in love and marriages break up, but just don't bang on about it, like, because it's going to upset Jennifer Aniston, who's lovely.
Yeah, and Angelina Jolie did an interview with Vogue that upset Jennifer Aniston. She said there was stuff printed in there that was definitely from a time when I was unaware that it was happening.
Oh, gross.
That stuff about how she couldn't wait to get to work every day. That was not cool.
That is not. That's upsetting. Like, it's just not classy business, is it? That's all.
Okay. Should we do the bits then?
Yeah.
Vicky, favourite scene?
Post-fight sex chat. Because it's only little, but they seem like real characters. They're not characters, these people. I don't have a fucking clue what they're like. There's a bit where Brad Pitt... John says to Jane, and it's good for the repartee in the back and forth. He's like, you've got no idea what I'm capable of. She's like, yeah, right back at you. And it's like, I have literally no idea what you're capable of. Like, you haven't shown me anything. Mm. There was a bit of there was something in Bogota that I didn't also get to see. I don't know who you are as people because you're so constrained by the plot here, which is like, don't show my real self that I don't know your real self. So why do I care about you? So when they're being themselves, I liked it.
Alex.
Express yourself. I love the fight scene. I mean, in fairness, I love the shootout that escalates into the fist fight, that escalates into the lovemaking, that escalates into the house exploding, that whole action sequence. But I did chuckle when Express Yourself came on and then she was throwing Brad Pitt through a glass cabinet. I was like, this is good. Mm. So that...
I like John killing the guys at the poker table. I think that's quite a cool and fun sequence. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's all I've got for you. Most valuable whatever, Alex Zane.
Vince Vaughn is very good in this. I'm a big Vince
I've written
Vaughn
down,
fan.
I always like Vince Vaughn because I'm not sure what to say here.
I do really like Vince Vaughn. Like, although, as we talked about on Four Christmases, I need Vince Vaughn to be good Vince Vaughn, or I need Vince Vaughn to be like do a lot, but them only need little bits of him, so they just cherry pick the best.
Yeah.
Like too much Vince Vaughn in a lead doing a shtick can be like, oh my god, stop. But here, I think every like just his little asides, like, you know, he wants like, you know, well, you do chocolate and vanilla, maybe if you put them together in a little bowl there, like just this stupid stuff that just adds. Anyway, it's not him though. I think Jolie is great. I think Pitt is probably the best from the on-screen talent. I honestly think he's so good in this. Doug Liman is a brilliant action director. I'm giving it to Simon Kinberg, though. Okay. I think this is such a good idea.
Yeah, it's a good
and
idea.
I do think, you know, it's possibly not been executed well in parts, but I think the concept, and I don't know, it's very difficult to know whether this idea of Terrence Stamp hunting down them was in his original script, because that might have made it even better.
No, I don't think it was. I think that there were 14 drafts. And as I said, this film was made by committee, ultimately, because I guess Simon Kinberg's script wasn't working, so...
Fine. Well, it's still Simon Kinberg.
Also,
coming up with the idea of two assassins in a failing marriage sorting out their differences with weapons.
I also noticed in 1996 there was a TV series starring Scott Bakula and Maria Bello called Mr. and Mrs. Smith about two spies recruited by an intelligence agency and posing as a married couple.
Really?
So, yeah, it's interesting. Just putting that out there. Just putting that out there.
That's your thesis, is it, Simon Kinberg? Watched the telly.
Not sure what year he was at uni, but just putting that out there.
I'm sticking with Kinberg.
Vicky, yeah, go.
I can't say this with a straight face now. It's Invincible.
Fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, my God.
But these are my actual notes.
I wrote it down and thought, I'm not going to say it out loud.
I know. I feel,
and you both said it.
I feel ashamed. Just word for word, so I don't have to look at you. I honestly think it's Vince Vaughn, but I don't need him to be in it anymore.
No. It's like, oh, there's a friendly face.
Yeah.
Are you going to say something funny?
Yeah, that's it. There we go.
Great.
That's amazing. Vince Vaughn for me.
Great. He's earned it. Yeah.
The bit about the ice cream.
Yeah, when he's serving on a waitress.
If you mix the two flavours together,
what do you get?
From the film Swingers, really, directed by Doug Liman, all of that stuff. What would you change? Alex, come to you.
I think I've done it. It's simply that act two. Once they find out that it is the other who is the other person and they have to kill them, it just gets so murky, the motivations of each of them and how they feel about the other and whether they love them or not. And I understand that in part it's like them trying to work out if they love the other person enough to not kill them, and information is drip fed, like they both think the marriage is a cover, and then you find out that actually it wasn't a cover, they got married because they really like each other. It's sort of all there, but I just feel that we're going back and forth and back and forth, and I just need them to get to the house, think they've poisoned each other, have a firefight, have sex, blow up the house and get on with the movie. That's it.
Mickey.
It's all of that. So the reconciliation comes sooner. They spend act two working the same job. They're closer than ever. They're being honest with each other. All of that honesty. But then the low point is they're too set in their particular ways and they can't make this thing work. So therefore the marriage is in trouble because they're not about to give up their work because they both like their work. So then do they need to split up and just go their separate ways? That's the low point. And it's all in there anyway. Like they have that conversation under the grate. So what do they do? They have a baddie, kill the baddie. They set up their own agents at the end, and their closeness is an asset, but their understanding of each other's mutual differences, which they can appreciate and live with. So they're now the best in the business because he does it this way, she does it that way. They're honest with each other. It's all good and everything's fantastic and they're having 10 times worth of sex or whatever.
Yeah, I think there was an ending where you think they're on a mission together sort of 5 years in the future and they're doing surveillance, but then you realise they're just on holiday looking for their kid.
Oh.
Who's sort of their toddler who they find. And
so that's the button to the baby thing as well. Like, it does annoy me that they don't need to have kids or they don't need to want to have kids, but wouldn't it be good if there was a conversation where right at the end we're like, we don't want to do that. We're just going to have this cool life together.
Yeah.
Fine. Whatever.
Just all these hanging threads.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's a confused film. It's a scrappy, messy film, but there's something about it that just
the fact that none of it makes any sense is the problem. and they flailed around shooting all this other stuff that might have improved it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my change, Ben being an agent should be as much a surprise to us as it is to them. The fact that they give us that information for the characters is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because we're smelling a rat before we should. But, I mean, at the end, mine's about the villain, really. They're killing... There's a bunch of people are the villains at the end here who are getting killed, who are just the same as them. Mm-hmm. We've been told to love these two characters, but they're doing the same job as the people they're killing. So they're not villains. And so it's quite weird to watch a lot of people get killed who aren't baddies within this universe. So I just think, Bogota, you've got to set something up at the start. John's there to kill a drug lord and he succeeds. And then 5 years later, that drug lord's brother is in town and is going to kill using her or whatever. Set it up at the start and bring it back at the end. Give us a villain, because at the moment, just these faceless people, it's there's no satisfaction whatsoever. The action scene is well shot, but there's no emotional stakes to it at all.
Agreed.
All right, then.
Great.
So, with that in mind, time for the verdict.
Nice one.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Okay, I think I'm going to go first, and I think you're going to go, and then we're going to see which way this puppy falls. So, True Lies makes me feel a little bit grubby watching it. I honestly find a lot of seedy stuff in it, and a lot of stuff that just is like, ugh. I come away from it feeling quite repulsed, to be perfectly honest. Bill Paxton peeing himself twice in a movie, and it's a testament to Jamie Lee Curtis and her performance that that film somehow gets away with not making you feel completely violated by a lot of the decisions it makes. It is possibly the only James Cameron film I fundamentally do not like. Like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith is also a mess. That middle act is scrappy, to say the least. The ending seems like a cheat. But Pitt and Jolly are great, and I like the idea itself. Mr. and Mrs. Smith gets a my vote. Vicky.
I just have a lot of respect for taking what is a pretty simple pitch. So if James Bond had a family, but then running with the family element. So it's not actually about a spy balancing work and home. It's a spy rescuing home from the damage his work has done. And I really like that because it's less obvious and it's much more fun. I get really on my high horse about scripty things just because the amounts of money that are flying around are like just mind-bogglingly huge. And what you said about the fight scene, structurally, that fight could have come and should have come 15 minutes earlier. Nothing has changed. And I can't forgive it. Like, that's just so basic. Like, everybody gets rinsed for structure, but you don't. Like, I just find it so annoying. So I think structurally, I mean, True Lies, it's, you know, a bit of a challenging watch, maybe. Not for me at 14. I just love it too much to see the badness. So yes, True Lies, 1,000%.
So you are voting for the most erotic film you've ever seen.
Okay. Did I say I'd ever seen? Or did I say ever made?
Ever made?
It
actually
doesn't matter what you said. Yeah. From now on, it's the most erotic film.
The thing is, I stand by it. Yeah. Does it not make... No, you said it made you feel grubby. And yeah. That's a shame for you.
It's so strange. This is... I don't know what's going on with you and I at the moment. We need to maybe have a sit down.
Am I in the midst of a body swap comedy that I don't know about?
All right, then. It's one apiece. So, Chris Tilley, who's going to be our winner?
I wasn't sure coming into this at all. I hadn't written down an answer. But what I had written down is movies about spies and assassins are good. Movies about couples not getting along are fine. Combining them maybe doesn't work.
Yeah,
that's what I'm seeing here. Not a fan of either of these films anymore. True Lies just feels so cruel. Smith feels a bit vacuous to me. True Lies is racist and misogynist. We've gone into that. But 14-year-old me did love it. Mr. and Mrs. Smith... just that real world stuff, I don't like it to have it in my brain, but the fact that the film's very existence upsets a human being, I find that upsetting.
Aww.
And Alex, you've talked me into this, really. The fact that we all nearly picked Vince Vaughn as the best thing in Mr. and Mrs. Smith means I've got to vote for True Lies. That's ridiculous.
That's fair.
And 14-year-old, I'm doing it for 14-year-old me, who really thoroughly enjoyed True Lies in the cinema, and if I had a gun to my head, it's the one I'd probably watch again now.
Yes, of course.
Okay. As long as I just sort of in the middle of that, it felt like you were not picking Mr. and Mrs. Smith because Jennifer Aniston might be upset,
which is very noble.
Yeah, I'm struggling here, but the way you were defending this script, maybe I've got to. I can't vote for that because it's scrappy, fucking scrappy.
It is scrappy.
All right, then we have a winner, and that winner is True Lies.
Well, grubby.
Good.
So, don't forget, you can have your say and tell us how right or wrong you think we got it when the listener poll goes up on Twitter, where we are at ClashPod. Okay, let's look ahead to next week. And for 1 week only, we are in Farch. So, Chris, what was the clue you gave us? No, V, what
Jesus
was the clue?
Alex.
it's Ron Burgundy.
It's written down. Yeah. Okay. The clue was, I can't believe you've forgotten this, I'll have a Martin McDouble, please. One with waffles, one with fish.
I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry. So you just don't. On this podcast, we don't get to say fish very often, and so that's maybe.
Say it all you like next week, apparently.
Yep.
I haven't even seen it, so I don't even know. Right, so.
Just tell us what we're doing! Right,
so we're doing In Bruges, which is available on Amazon, YouTube, etc. And the Banshees of Inisherin, which is Disney Plus.
So it is In Bruges versus the Banshees of Inisherin. That is next week's one time only Farch episode. Do join us for that in the meantime. Don't forget you can subscribe to us if you haven't done already on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Check in with us on YouTube, our Clash of the Titles YouTube channel. Subscribe to that. Find us on social media. We're at ClashPod across everything. We'll be back on Monday talking In Bruges. Have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.